You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Time for that Monday basketball talk. It's kind of wild, right? We're three games deep into the NBA season already, and there is a lot of exciting things that happened over the first 2 to 3 games of the season. I know Jazz fans right now are happy. Even though they're 1-1, I think there's been enough positives there that have made Jazz fans happy. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about what else is going on in the NBA, including injuries, and how teams are trying to adapt to season-long injuries. Joining us as he does each week, we have our NBA analyst, James Holis. James, always a pleasure to get you back on now that we are about 3 games deep into the season. And I'll tell you, it's been entertaining up to this point. It really has.
Well, I wish I could say that it's been entertaining for me, but my Boston Celtics are 0 wins, 3 losses, and it's not that much fun. But a lot of good things go on in the league, so I can at least take solace in watching Wembanyama play basketball.
Before we talk about Wemby, I do want to talk about some heavy hitters throughout the first 3 games that are winless. And you mentioned the Boston Celtics. We know they had a catastrophic injury. There was no Jason Tatum. Another team that got all the way to the NBA Finals in the Indiana Pacers, the defending Eastern Conference champs, they are 0-3. We know they had a catastrophic injury in the Finals with Tyrese Halliburton. They have had a problem adapting as well. We go over the Western Conference, the Houston Rockets. It's going to take some time for these guys to adapt, right? I mean, relatively healthy, but they have yet to win a basketball game. I think those are the two biggest stories. The other two on the Eastern Conference, maybe not so surprising. That's got to be a bigger adjustment than Houston trying to figure out how to coexist with someone like Kevin Durant. So let's start with the Eastern Conference. Celtics, Pacers, two things that stand out to you about two teams that are 0-3.
I think that if this was a video game, right, you lose your star, you just shoot more with the other guys, and you have one guy to maybe block more shots, and you kind of just make it work. But real life is not like video games. We're seeing exactly how much Jason Tatum and Tyrese Halliburton mean to their respective teams, because it's not just statistically, it's just how much responsibility they take up on both sides of the ball, especially for Tatum, both sides of the ball. We know that Halliburton's not a great defender, but whatever. They mean so much. Their fingers are on everything that their teams do offensively. That without them, the other teams going to struggle mightily. And for a team like the Pacers, well, both teams, Pacers and the Celtics, they also lost, you know, a big piece of their front court. Boston lost Al Horford and Kristaps and Luke, while the Pacers lost Miles Turner. And it shows, man. There's a talent drain. No matter how much culture, no matter how good your coach is, it's going to be an adjustment. I think both teams will look better by January once they kind of adjust to their new reality. But it's not like getting stitches. It's like a major surgery. They lost a major limb, and they're trying to readjust to life right now.
Let's talk about Boston for a second, because if you watch the first 3 games, I mean, obviously the game against New York, I don't think that game was nearly as close as the final score would indicate. But when you take a look at the other 2 losses, one of the 76ers and one of the Pistons, really it was about a 5-6 minute stretch in the third quarter that hampered Boston against Detroit. And then outside of that, I mean, you're right there against Philadelphia. And I think you could use the same logic, right, with Indiana. I mean, the Pacers have been competitive, which even though you're 0-3, I think early on in the season when you're trying to adjust to losing such big pieces offensively, as you just talked about a moment ago, you look for any sort of silver lining. And the silver lining would be Indiana was competitive, right? They went into overtime, suffered a loss. And then you go back and you take a look at the game. It was Minnesota that came down to the wire. They also lost that game. So Indiana and Boston have shown signs of at least being competitive. There's been literally 5-6 minute stretches in a couple of these games that have cost them dearly.
Yeah, for both of these teams, their margin for error is just so paper thin now.
Yes.
Without their superstar to kind of be able to boost them and elevate them and do things that, you know, they just kind of break defenses. For Boston, I think against the Knicks, it was their worst second quarter differential ever. They outscored like 17-38 or something, or 42. Some ridiculous. They outscored 28 in the second quarter.
42-14.
There you go.
Yep.
Ridiculous that. Yeah. And it just shows like both teams are trying to navigate a new reality. Guys are being asked to do things they've never done before, or asked to do more than they've ever done before. For both teams, they both have new pieces. Boston especially, I think, brought in 5 or 6 new guys who basically are outcasts for other teams, right? Kind of like the scrap from other teams, not like bona fide vet kind of established players. These guys all have something to prove. So both teams have shown in spurts what they're capable of at their height, but their floor is also really low. So yeah, it's all about just new habits, new like Boston has issues with defensive rotations. They're trying a new kind of defensive style. But both teams have so much to navigate, and for both of these teams, it's like a gimme year, right? They're both in a holding pattern until the superstar comes back. So it's a year of discovery for both squads, and in the micro level, it's not fun to watch these losses, but in the macro, both coaches are learning new stuff about players that they probably wouldn't learn otherwise.
Okay, let's talk about the Houston Rockets. What do you make of the 0-2 start? Again, two games, which they very easily could be 2-0, but the fact of the matter is they've dropped both these games.
To a lesser extent, they lost a very key piece also. They might have lost a major limb, but they lost like a toe or a finger, and it takes a while to navigate. Maybe a little more than that, because Fred VanVleet, while he's not a superstar, he's not even a star. He meant a lot to them. They lost their starting point guard, so now your backup point guard is elevated, and everyone else has to play a different role. Kevin Durant looked great. We know he's going to score the ball. They are also a work in progress. They have to navigate their spacing issues because of the way they play. I will say that Baby Joker over there looks really good. But, yeah, it's just early season. But one thing I will say, no matter what, Boston, Houston, Indiana, it takes a team about 20 games to figure out who they really are as the season starts, right? They have to adjust. So I wouldn't panic for the Houston Rockets. I wouldn't panic. I think they're going to be fine. Celtics and Indiana have a little more, you know, invasive problems. But Houston, I think, is going to be absolutely fine.
Again, James Hollis joining us right now as we talk about the NBA first three games of the season. James, I do want to talk about one more team that has struggled before we talk about some of the elite teams. Let's talk about the Dallas Mavericks. Right now, I think that there's really, again, missing a key piece in Kyrie Irving, and we don't know what Kyrie is going to look like when he comes back. But the fact is, Cooper Flagg does not look to me, he does not look comfortable coming out of the backcourt. And maybe, again, we're talking about something that's going to take a big adjustment period. But when you look at this Mavericks roster, is this team set to contend in the Western Conference? And it's such a short sample size. I hate to play the hyperbole card. I hate to be a prisoner in the moment. We're talking about Cooper Flagg being three games deep into his NBA career. I don't know the answer to this. And this is why I'm asking you. Is this a team that you believe can be a serious contender, a legitimate contender out of the Western Conference?
It's not, because they're having the same issue that kind of Indiana and the Celtics have, but it's delayed, right? They lost a super-duper star. They brought in a much better player in Anthony Davis. Obviously, they drafted Cooper Flagg. Most rookies aren't helpful NBA players. Cooper is going to probably be an exception, but he's still not going to be a star. He's not going to be a super-impact player. Anthony Davis is Anthony Davis. We saw what he did for years in New Orleans by himself, which means not a lot. He's a very good player. As a secondary guy, as your primary guy, you're going to struggle. And then Kyrie Irving, we saw he's not a leader either. So I'm curious to see what they look like when he gets back. But still, now you have two Robins and no Batman going on in Dallas. So obviously the future is very bright in Dallas because Cooper Flagg is going to be a star, multiple-time All-Star kind of player. But right now they have a bunch of forwards. They don't have a real table setter, no point guard. They're going to struggle. So I don't think they were contenders even with Kyrie because, again, Kyrie and Anthony Davis are both, you know, secondary guys. I don't think either one can really lead you deep into the playoffs. But they're going to be talented. I think they're going to win a lot more regular season games. They're going to look fine for the most part. Jason Kidd has proven to be a really good coach. I don't know if people remember this. I think he did this with Giannis, too. Did he have Giannis playing point guard for a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
His rookie year or the year two or whatever. So I have no problem with them trying things out of the box with Cooper Flagg because this is how you get the most out of him, see him in different situations. So overall, on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, I concern would be about a 3, but even at their best, I think concern for them being a 10 would be like a 5. I don't have a lot of belief in Dallas.
I really hate to bring this back up again, but after what we saw from Luka in the first two games of the season as a Maverick fan, you still got to be sick about this deal, right? I mean, you have to be.
As a Mavericks fan, absolutely. Absolutely. They made the best they can. Cooper's like a nice consolation prize. Anthony Davis, you know, you still have a few years of him. I mean, they love Kyrie Irving. Fun to watch, box office. But no, Luka comes out, looks the way he's looked. It's one of those things, they're never going to get over it. As a sports fan, it's about as traumatic as you can get, other than, you know, knock on wood, someone like one of your, you know, a superstar passing. I hope that didn't get too dark. But no, they just ripped him out of there and they sent him away. And for what? He's a generational guy. Luka's incredible.
Again, right now, James Holish joining us as we talk NBA basketball. James, let's move over and talk about a team that has been very good. And this is year two of the Wemby experiment. You just said a moment ago, this gives every NBA fan something to look at. This is what I get excited about when I take a look at the league. I have not been a fan of the leaders of this league over the past, say, 5-6 years. You and I talked about this last year. When I take a look at the new age talent coming through in the NBA, doesn't seem to be the fraternity click. Doesn't seem to be we all love each other, we all want to play with one another. Doesn't seem to be that. We're starting to see guys that can stand on their own. We're starting to see guys in markets that have not been relevant in a while give us something to watch. And I think this is what's happening right now in San Antonio. When you take a look at what Wemby has done so far throughout three games, if you haven't paid attention to this, let me send this out there for the listeners. 33 points, 13 rebounds, nearly 2 steals, and 6 blocks through three games this season. My goodness. And this is all in about 32 minutes of play, by the way.
And as great as the numbers look, it's even more impressive.
Yep.
Watch it.
Yep.
It looks like, look, LeBron James is kind of like Scottie Pippen on steroids. You know, Grant Hill was, you know, like Grant Hill walks and LeBron James could fly. Even a guy like Kevin Durant, right? We had guys like Dedalus Trampf and, you know, been tall scorers. And sure, Kevin Durant was like the epitome of that. We don't have an analog for what we're seeing with Wemby. No matter what people want to say about Bol Bol, you know, that's Shaq's big thing. Wemby is the size of, like, the biggest player ever, one of the biggest players ever. What's the guy's name? Sean Bradley. He has a handle almost like KD, and he's shooting the ball off the dribble in ways that we've never seen a guy his size do. And this defensively, he's such a monster. I can't. There's very, very few players that I think have been must-see TV. Steph on a heater. LeBron James, who scored like 25 straight when he was with the Cavs. This, just watching him on it, this is him being Wembanyama on a early season Wednesday night is like that. He is must-see TV. You can't take your eyes off him. It's incredible. So the NBA, like you said, man, we kind of wait for the next big star. He's here, and he's here 100%. This is not a he's going to be a superstar. Wemby is a superstar.
Superstar, literally. And I think that's a term that gets thrown out there maybe a little bit too often, right? Superstar. I'm not talking about someone. Let me back this up. A superstar is someone that you will pay to see on the road, right? And here in the state of Utah, I can use this analogy pretty effectively because the basketball has not been great over the last couple of years. Yet there are still players that come into town where the Delta Center sells out. And they are there to see not the Jazz, who have won 15 to 20 games. They're there to see an individual player. Wemby is going to be that guy. He is going to sell out arenas on the road. That is the making of a superstar.
I was showing my non-NBA-loving co-worker some of his highlights today, and they're like, oh, I'm going to tune in. Because it's – and you know, they know me. I love basketball. I can talk the sport. I'm pretty, you know, I'm pretty kind of rational and even-keeled for the most part. And I was just gushing about Wembanyama. And, yeah, I think that, you know, that even, you know, someone's grandmother, and she doesn't really watch basketball, she just look up on TV and see this guy doing these freakish things and wonder, like, what, who is this guy? You know, I can see a lot of soccer moms wearing Wembanyama, like, T-shirts because he is that fun and just that. Let's see, it sounds corny. He's like a wholesome kind of star. You know, big smile, handsome guy. Seems really easygoing and fun off the court. He's what the NBA needs.
He is to the NBA as to what Shohei Ohtani is to baseball. And I know that's we're talking about a guy that's got a $700 million contract. We're talking about a guy that in the NLCS, he pitched 6 innings, struck out 10, hit 3 home runs, right? We've never seen it before. When I watch Wembanyama, I feel the exact same way about him on the basketball court this early in his career as I do when I watch Ohtani play baseball.
Yeah, just seeing the look on the faces of the opposite bench when Wembanyama's doing things, the way, like, Derek Lively's a 7'1", springy young center, and Wembanyama blocked his shot like a father blocking his son in the driveway. It's like, you know what, I'm almost never, like, have a loss for words, but he's almost indescribable. It almost breaks your brain watching him play.
All this talk, we haven't even mentioned the defending world champs yet in the Oklahoma City Thunder. I haven't even talked about them yet, but here they are sitting at 3-0. In fact, they got a game tonight that I'm really entertained by. They got to go on the road and take on the Dallas Mavericks. What stands out to you about Oklahoma City throughout the first three games?
It stands out that even they're without Jalen Williams, so it's really hard to judge them. But they've had two double overtime games already. Shea still looks incredible. Chet looks like he's taking another maybe mini leap, but he hasn't really advanced. But this is what it's like, right? Year two of the chase for the ring. Every team is going to bring 100%, I think, obviously. Every team is really gunning for them. There's going to be a little bit, you know, they're young, they're energetic and athletic, but there's still that fatigue playing deep into the season, and now you start off again with the same kind of intensity. But I haven't seen anything that's going to really knock them off the pivot where everyone's kind of almost penciling them in for the finals again, barring injuries. So knock on wood, they look good. You know what really stands out to me? Their depth. They have a guy named A.J. Mitchell, who I've never heard of before, who looked incredible. They have another guy off their bench, Wiggins. Wiggins, who, you know, I heard his name.
Aaron Wiggins.
I thought he was just some end-of-the-bench guy.
Yep.
Looked incredible. They have so many wings. So it's like a factory over there. It's kind of terrifying.
The only thing I will say about OKC, and again, small sample size. I don't ever want to jump to conclusions this early in the season because we're not even a week into this yet. However, through three games, SGA, over 40 minutes a game. Dort right now, close to 40 minutes a game. Now, this obviously is not sustainable, but I welcome it. I'm happy to see it, right? Because so often, and I was complaining to you about this earlier on, superstars not playing, stars not playing, best players not playing early on, load management in October, give me a break. SGA is going 40 minutes a game right now, and I think Dort is something like 39. He's right there with them. It's not sustainable, but I give him a lot of credit for this.
Yeah, and I understand they want to come out and make a good showing early in the season. They do have a standard to set. Their standards are excellent. So even without Jalen Williams, they're not going to let the foot off the gas. I did not realize that SGA was playing so many minutes.
40.
Dort, I can see. Dort's like a fire plug, and it seems tireless. And, you know, doesn't have as much responsibility as SGA. But for SGA to be playing that many minutes, we know that the Thunder are a very analytics-driven team. We know that they believe in the science. I'm with you. I guarantee that's going to be coming down soon, and we probably will see him sit sometimes during this season. They're going to keep an eye on his on all his metrics. But that is kind of impressive to come out the season like that.
We'll end by talking about some other injuries that aren't season-ending by any stretch. You know, we talked about some of those earlier on. Let's talk about a couple of superstars that are down right now. Anthony Edwards is going to miss 2 weeks. And then as far as Luka Doncic is concerned, he comes out firing. I mean, he looked fantastic. He's sidelined for at least a week. He's got a left finger sprain and lower leg bruise or some malarkey like that, so he's going to be missing a week. It's never good, right, when you have these injuries early on, but also, going back to what we were just talking about, playing 40 minutes a game, a lot of this is a cautionary tale where these guys would probably be playing, if we're talking about April or crunch time down the stretch, in October, these two are going to miss about 2 to 3 weeks.
That's why I'm at with it, too. I was kind of shocked when I heard about the Luka injury, but we also know that every year we hear around February, March, Luka's playing with a bunch of lingering injuries, and it affects him, right? It does. And you know, we see the new look, Luka Doncic. Maybe he has a new attitude, a new mentality, because this is the Lakers franchise. It's a different echelon of playing for the Dallas Mavericks. No matter what people want to think, you're not just the star of a team; you're star of a flagship franchise. So I'm okay with the Lakers maybe slow rolling him just a little bit. As long as they don't make a habit of this, where like every little hangnail they pull him out for a week, I'm okay with them doing that early on in the season. It does give them a chance also, you know, gives gives Coach Redick a chance to see some other things. Like, you know, we don't see Austin Reeves drop 51 last night if Luka's on the court probably. And we're going to get other guys reps and maybe a little more shots to get them to rhythm. Guys like Gabe Vincent, maybe this helps. Marcus Smart got to run point guard and kind of get himself situated. So maybe it's almost a small silver lining that we let other guys get a lot more responsibility and touches and maybe get comfortable with the ball. And then Luka comes back, and they can kind of fall back to the natural position, and they'll play a little more confidently. Maybe so we'll see.
Maybe. The bright spot for Luka, I guess you go back to the Laker game last night, you talk about Austin Reeves scoring 51 points. I don't know how sustainable a Reeves and Doncic's backcourt is defensively. It's atrocious. Can you think of a worse, how do I want to phrase this? What you get offensively may be equally as bad defensively, right, when you're rolling those two out of the backcourt. So seeing Marcus Smart out there on the floor, it's nice. I love Marcus Smart. I know you do as well. But boy, Doncic and Reeves backcourt, not a whole lot there defensively.
Nah, and I got to give Luke his props. He's not my favorite guy. He has even looked like almost...
significantly better, right?
He looked almost passable defensively a couple times, yep. Man. He's looked incredible. So, yeah, man, you're right, long-term. And Austin Reeves might play himself out of that, hey, I'm a third banana roll this season. Because you know what? I was late to the show because I was watching the highlights from his game last night. Holy moly, man. He was on a heater. So, I get it. Lakers fans might be a little frustrated not being able to see their superstar and their stars on the court together. I would say it's probably better in the long run.
Yeah, I agree. You know what? When you go back and you talk about what Austin Reeves did last night, because I've been pretty critical of Austin Reeves, and so I think, you know, accountability is never something that I stray away from. I will even go back and take a look at the performance last night. It was the efficiency at what he worked with last night that was so impressive to me. Even someone who has been a critic of Austin Reeves, I appreciate his game, don't get me wrong, but the idea of what payday may be in front of him, I've never really bought into. But when you go back and you take a look at last night, he missed a triple-double by one assist. He nearly had a 50-point triple-double. You have to play efficient basketball to even sniff those kind of numbers. And so, you got to be real. I mean, the efficiency last night was out of this world.
I mean, some of those shots he hit, obviously, like, again, he's on a heater. That's not, like, normal. But the fact that he had the audacity and the skill level to take some of those shots is just incredible. So he's a really good player. He does have his flaws, obviously, especially on the defensive end. And we've seen it. When he's not making shots, you know, he's still going to be a nice playmaker, but if he's not making shots, he can really be almost a liability out there. So I'm begrudgingly giving him his props because he's not one of my favorite types of player, but he's a good player.
Yeah, I'm with you. James Holis again taking out the time to join us. James, always great to have this NBA Monday talk. Before I let you go, where can we find more of you?
More of me? You don't want to find more of me. I'm one of one, and you should be thankful for that. I'm on social media. You know, Scottie Pippen was my favorite player growing up, so as an homage to him and his giant nose, my social media name was Snotty Dripping. Now I'm really talking hoops. You know, not a lot of Celtics talk because there's not much to talk about, but let's go on there and praise Wembanyama.
There's a lot to talk about, man. I know it's not the season that you guys have been accustomed to so far, but again, if we talk about some of the other moves that we get to see from J.J. Redick in the short term, I think for the Boston Celtics, it's time to reshape things a little bit, and I think you got a savvy front office, and it's not ideal. Don't get me wrong. It's definitely not ideal, but I think what we see right now is going to shape the next 3 to 4 years of this franchise.
It's never fun watching losses, though.
No.
Thank you for the positive spin, but get out of here.
James, always a pleasure. Can't wait to do it again next week.
Yeah. Let's hope the Celtics get a win by then, man. Always a pleasure to talk to you, buddy.
We're going
to
pause for just a moment. We'll be right back. More Drive Time Sports on the flip side when we return.